Oh, that's you. Hi, Denise. Very nice to meet you. Yes, same here. Nice to see you here.
Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm going to conduct the rulemaking hearing on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Buescher, who I believe will be joining us to the extent that he can. He's got some other duties, but he does want to listen to as much of the hearing as he can. Since this is a formal rulemaking hearing, let me do some preliminaries first. This is a hearing conducted under the State Administrative Procedure Act, Section 24-4-103, Colorado Revised Statutes. This is a recorded meeting, and it's also being broadcast on the Internet. So for the record, this is the date is February 3rd, 2009, and the time is 2:33 p.m. We're meeting in the Blue Spruce Conference Room on the second floor of the Office of the Secretary of State at 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Some other introductions. To my immediate right is Chris Cash, who is the Charities Program Manager in the Secretary of State's Division of Licensing and Enforcement. I think joining us shortly will be Mike Shea, who is the Director of the Division of Division of Licensing and Enforcement. And then, like as I indicated, hopefully Secretary Buescher will be here shortly as well. The purpose of the hearing is to receive public comment on proposed rules and revised rules implementing the Colorado Charitable Solicitations Act. The Secretary of State's office prepared a draft of the proposed rules, which is on the table by the door at the entranceway. The hearing is held pursuant to a notice of rulemaking that was issued on December 31, 2008, and published in the Colorado Register on January 10, 2009. I might just mention just basically where the rules are coming from. There is a proposed statement of basis and purpose that provides a little more detail, but generally, there's three or four factors that I think are giving rise to the rules. One is legislation last year, House Bill 08-1109, which authorized the Secretary of State to set and levy fines for noncompliance with the Colorado Charitable Solicitations Act. Another factor was a performance audit conducted by the State Auditor's Office last year that made some recommendations to the Secretary of State on revisions to the way that the Charitable Solicitations Act is implemented. Third, there's simply just, I think, some proposed rule changes that reflect questions that have come up over the years. It's been quite some time, actually, I think, since we've revisited the charitable solicitation rules. So I think there's a number of things that are being addressed with the proposed rules. The original notice of rulemaking probably said that there could be a revision to the proposed rules, but I don't think there has been. I think the original draft is really what we're going to be working from today. That's dated December 31, 2008. Just for the record, the Secretary of State's office has received three written comments for the formal rulemaking record. Consisting of comments from Ithaca Land Trust, dated January 21st, 2009, in the form of an email. Also comments from Kathy Dean on behalf of Long Hope's Donkey Shelter, which is a member of the Colorado Nonprofit Association. And then also comments from Phil Miller of TLC Meals on Wheels. And I think that's all we have at this point. And I think if that covers my preliminaries, I want to turn to public comment. If anybody wishes to testify, we do have sign-up sheets on the door, on the tables by the door. And when you testify, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent, if anyone. Larry, do we have, can you bring, do we have anybody signed up? Thank you. First person signed up is Steve Morrow, I believe it is. Yes, if you'd like to come forward and are you testifying or just? Sure. Whatever you prefer. Why don't one of you come forward and do whatever order you're comfortable following?
My name is Denise Hoffman, and I'm here representing Steve on behalf of Cars Helping Charities. Our law firm has represented his organization for quite some time. And as the two of you are probably familiar, we presented a request for advisory opinion last year, and I know that these proposed rules, in part, provide some responses to our questions. And so today, the purpose of my being here and Steve and then Sharon Kermit from Goodwill Industries as well is really to focus on very specific issues that are broached in the proposed rules and not to get into specific issues that only pertain to my client. So that's just a little preface for you before we start. First, I'd like to commend you on putting together a very comprehensive and much-needed set of rules. I think this is a great starting point for, in my case, paid solicitors, charitable organizations, and other organizations that need to have a little bit more guidance in complying with the Charitable Solicitations Act. The one rule in particular that we all three would like to speak on today is Rule 12, which is the application of the registration requirements to internet solicitation. And this is an issue that we've been discussing for quite some time, and I know, Chris, from our discussions and from some prior research, a lot of this rule comes from the Charleston Principles and some other documents that are in existence that talk about how presence on the internet gives rise or does not give rise to solicitations. And in particular, the one issue that I'd like to focus upon is really raised in 12.1.1, which states that, in essence, an entity within the state of Colorado that uses the internet to conduct charitable solicitations is required to comply with the registration requirements. The essence of our question and what we would like to see greater clarification focused upon is how charitable solicitations, as defined under the Act, should be interpreted. Under Section 6-16-103, Subpart 10, we have a definition for both solicit and solicitation, which requires a direct or indirect request to be made. And that is about the extent of the detail that's provided under the Act. Under Rule 12, you don't even have an application under this rule unless you are conducting such solicitations. And so for our specific purposes and for more general application, I think it's necessary to maybe focus on providing greater clarification about what actually is tantamount to a request, specifically in an internet, when you have an internet presence. So for purposes of our testimony today, we are focused upon how you define solicitation, how you define a request. And if we're going with the standard meaning of the word request, you would have to actually ask for something of value to be provided. And through the internet, if you simply have a website, does that mean that the request has been made? As Steve will testify and also Ms. Kermit, our client's website does not make the overt request, but is actually more of a tool that potential donors can access once they have made initial contact with the 501c3 entity of their choice. So for our purposes, this is more of a secondhand contact that a potential donor would make with the Cars Helping Charities website and not their initial point of contact for their contribution. Ms. Kermit is with Goodwill Industries of Denver, and she is actually here to talk about the work that Cars Helping Charities has done with Goodwill over the past few years. Goodwill Industries represents the largest charity in terms of the volume that Cars Helping Charities has done work with over the years. And as Sharon will explain, the role that Cars Helping Charities plays with her organization in particular is more of an expediter than a solicitor. This is an organization that helps to process donations once they are presented to Goodwill. So again, when we look at the activities in that sense, it's a little bit different than an organization that's making a request, that's actually soliciting, and that would fall into the paid solicitor category. And so at this point, I'd like to have Steve come up and give a little bit of background about his website, specifically since Rule 12 is focused on the internet presence, and then Ms. Kermit will give a little bit of background about the website that she maintains at Goodwill and how that interfaces with the Cars Helping Charity website.
Ms. Hoffman, could I ask maybe one question?
Absolutely.
And maybe this is going to come, but I want to go ahead and pose a question right now. Do you have some suggestions on how the rules ought to define request or solicit?
In terms, I think solicit and solicitation as they're currently defined under the Act, because they rely on that word request, if the rules could go into more detail specifically with internet solicitation, and maybe talk about, I know there's this distinction between active and passive websites, which is really a moot point based upon the way that the rule is drafted. Regardless of the type of website you have, you fall under the registration requirements if you're requesting donations. So potentially, I don't know if providing examples would be too limiting, but potentially providing some greater illustrations as to websites that actually make that type of request that give rise to the solicitation. I think that's more important than really going into greater detail about active versus passive, which I know is a point we've discussed at great length, because regardless of the type, you will be required to register, if I'm understanding correctly, as long as a solicitation is being made.
Okay. By a Colorado entity?
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Stephen Morrow, president of Cars Helping Charities. Started Cars Helping Charities 7 years ago this November. Approximately 200 charities that I work for, and just want to talk a little bit about our website and how that works. We maintain a website that's basically educational and informative to my charity's donors that come through looking for a way to donate their car through those charities. So I've built a website that gives them lots of information to let them choose whether donating a car is something best on their behalf. So, and basically, the internet directories with specifically through the links provided on our website are basically coming from the links that are in the charity's website that are directing them to our website to further their educational process about donating a vehicle. So to the way we've talked it over, you know, what I do with my website and the way it's built is not been built to solicit to the public. It's there for an educational tool to give my charity's donors a way to find out about donating a vehicle prior to them doing it. And last thing, I don't feel that our website does any requests for donations on our behalf or on the behalf of any of our charities.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Sharon Kermit, and I'm the Vice President of Finance and Administration at Goodwill Industries of Denver. I have been with Goodwill for about a year and a half, and in my position I have oversight of finance, HR, insurance, legal, and it includes the oversight of the car donation program. I am rather new to Goodwill, but Goodwill contracted with Steve in the last half of 2006 to facilitate our car donation program. And prior to that time, we had a lot of difficulty finding honest people and people who would return calls, is the understanding that I've gotten from our president. When Steve came on board, there was complete transparency. We do not have, I think in the entire year and a half that I've been there, we've had maybe one donor call about something that Steve did, and it turned out to be an unusual family situation. So he handles our donors with great care. And we've seen the program really grow. The things that I think there are four basic things probably that Steve does for our program. He really streamlines the donation process for our donors. He, for instance, takes calls from our donors 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So he's really present and there for our donors. He prepares all the IRS forms that are that must accompany a donation, both for Goodwill and for the donors. And then he works aggressively to get the best price for the cars that are donated, whether that's through a salvage market or an auction. And I have frequent conversations with him, probably twice, three times a week, talking through the details of the donation process. I wanted to support the idea, too, that it's Goodwill who's making the request, the solicitation. There are a number of ways that we advertise, but it is always listing a phone number for Goodwill. And that phone number then rings through straight to Steve's office, and he just immediately expedites the whole process. I have kind of termed it an expediter, the role that Steve plays for us, because he really just facilitates that whole process for the donor and for Goodwill. It really takes a lot of the administrative burden off Goodwill to have Steve being the expediter. Another major way that donors find out about our donation program is through our website, and that is goodwilldenver.org. And you will click on Donate and Shop on the left-hand side. That leads you to car donation, and you click on that. And then there is a place on that next page that says Click Here to Donate. And you can either call the number that goes straight to Steve, or you can click and it leads to Steve's website. And on his website is again our number that is particular to Goodwill and rings straight to Steve. Or you can do a sign-up sheet on Steve's website that identifies the car donation with our organization. I don't know if you're interested in financial information, but we've done very well in the program the last couple of years since Steve has been with us, and I think that has to do with the good service, that partly to do with the good service that he provides the donors. He's always cordial, polite, and he advances our mission. He's very understanding of what we do and comes to our functions so that he keeps well educated about what we do too and can help with that part of the communication for us. I guess I would just emphasize that I understand the questions and the issues to some extent on the solicitation question, and I think that it's pretty clear to me that Goodwill makes the solicitation, and then Steve acts as the person sort of behind the scenes who just facilitates the transaction. So, do you have any questions about Goodwill's role or Steve's role with us?
It sounds like Goodwill makes every effort to steer people towards the website or the phone number, and as I understand it, then Goodwill does not independently accept donations of cars. It would be, if anybody walked in the door and said, "I want to leave my car here," you would steer them towards Cars Helping Charities.
Yes, in 100% of the cases, because
okay.
We're just not.
Okay.
I guess I have one more question too.
How does the process work from the customer dropping off the car to who they sign the title over and who eventually takes title of the vehicle?
That is handled by Steve. So he will get a call, and correct me if you want to talk about that. You might have more first-hand knowledge.
The donor makes the phone call. My staff takes the information about the address where we'll be picking it up. Pertinent information it takes for the tax forms that we provide after the sale of the vehicle. Car is sold, and the money is taken from the sale of the vehicle and gone to the charities that the donor has. I wasn't really listening.
I guess I'm trying to zero in on the on the verb sold. What happens when they sell it to you? Do they sign the title over to Cars Helping Charities?
You have to have a dealer's license in Colorado to sell a vehicle. Cars Helping Charities holds a wholesale license, which allows us to only sell to a dealer. A license, you have to have a retail license. Car is transferred from the donor to Cars Helping Charities, from Cars Helping Charities as the seller to my buyer.
And your buyer is a dealer somewhere or auction yard?
You know,
or?
I use a variety of things depending on the vehicle. Better ways to make more money out of it.
Okay. Can, and if I could ask Mr. Morrow, try to understand a little better, although maybe you covered this, but I suppose independent, I'm assuming that people come to you, well, brokers, auto brokers or whatever, people trade-ins. I'm trying to think. It seemed like when I last traded my car in, a broker handled it, and he took the car, and I wanted it donated to charity. I'm not even sure what he did with it. But independently, do people come to you with cars to donate without reference to a specific charity? They just want to donate it to a charity. Do you decide? Do they decide?
The donor always decides what charity.
And is it, could it be a broker or a dealer that
I
has?
I guess it could be. I don't think we get cars that way because most brokers have their own junk people that will give them a few hundred dollars to take that car away, and more than likely they'd rather make the cash than try to get the donation out of that as a company versus an individual.
I think so. Okay. Thank you.
One last point to your question. Goodwill, and as I understand it, all charities don't have the dealer's license. And so from that intake procedure, they couldn't take title and then sell it. It has to go through an organization with a dealer's license. So that is a little bit of an integral factor as to who takes title.
There has been many of my smaller charities that when they've come to me, they've said, oh, we've been taking in donations and selling the cars. Well, legally in Colorado, you can sell three without a dealer's license, and I think a lot of them have been doing more than that but didn't really know the law. So it's really been a help to them to have my organization there do it in a legal way.
Are there other organizations like yours?
There are. I don't know. Two that come to mind is one is called Vehicles for Charity, owned by the ART Group. And the other one was set up by a for-profit company called Clody's back before the tax law changed in 04. Probably 2 years before that, they were able to go out and get their 501c3. How they were able to and I wasn't, we don't know to this day. Gentleman in Denise's office that I started working with years ago helped me through that process, and we spent 2.5 years working on 501c3 and got denied. The only thing that anybody can tell me is we were doing that around the 04 year, 02 or 03, 04, and that's when the tax law changed for car donations from what someone could donate. They could claim fair market value in 04, and now they can only claim what I sell their vehicle for, which made a huge impact on fire industry. But at that point, we were denied, and from what I understand, there were four other groups around the country like mine that got denied at the same time. But I do nothing really different than Cars for Charity, which is owned by a for-profit company, which is really a salvage yard. So, you know, they set up their nonprofit to actually filter cars through their auction. So, to me, that's a little more for-profit business than what I do for my charities. Tried our hardest to get the 501c3 and
thank you. Ms. Hoffman, do you have anything else? No. Okay. Any other questions?
No, I don't think so. Not right now.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks to all three of you. Let me call next on, I think it's Rania Kelly.
Hello, my name is Rania Kelly. I'm the Executive Director of the Redistribution Center, Incorporated. I'm a long-time volunteer of the Redistribution Center. I've given 20 years of my life to serve my community and my country, 40,000 hours total so far, and $31.9 million worth of merchandise that have gone through and out to people all over the country. And one thing I want to do is say thank you to Chris Cash and the rest of your team, and also Terry. He recently came across some things that we didn't know was a concern on our 990s. If it wasn't for you guys, there'd be no way that we would be able to make sure that our CPA is doing the right thing. So thank you so much for that. I do want a clarification on solicitation. What is solicitation? What do you consider solicitation for money? If you put something on your website that says you can donate cash by check or credit card or something along those lines, and there's a lot of us smaller organizations that don't have the availability to a legal firm and other high-powered, you know, people that can give them advice. There's probably, what, thousands of us out there throughout the state of Colorado that I think really possibly have questions on what solicitation really is. I know several nonprofits that actually have huge fundraisers. They have these big galas and et cetera, et cetera. Do we have to register that information with you and how much money comes from that? If we don't and there's no guidelines, you know, we're a little confused on what solicitation is. So hopefully you can maybe give us some insight as smaller nonprofits in the community, maybe even town hall meetings where you require some of the smaller nonprofits to come. Coming downtown is a little bit more difficult and probably a lot scarier for a lot of other individuals to do so. Any suggestions?
Well, I'm going to defer to the Deputy Secretary in terms of whether I should be giving legal opinions or not. But I can say that we would be happy to go out to wherever you are to conduct small group meetings and discuss the matter. I don't think it's offering much of an opinion to say that the rules, I think, speak quite directly to that situation. If you're a Colorado entity and you have a website that is processing donations through a donate now button, I mean, I think I and most of my fellow regulators around the country regard that as a solicitation for a contribution.
Okay. And now what if you go out to, say, Safeway and you put your little canisters on their thing that says donate cash? Is that also considered solicitation, and do you have to? Okay. Those are things that,
yes,
I think a lot of us smaller groups, maybe not the larger ones, you know, they probably already know. So those are things that I have questions about, because I see this all the time from smaller groups, and it's going on in our community, and we've stayed away from it, but others are not.
Well, I'm not sure there's any reason to stay away from it. It's the way to raise funds these days.
Okay.
If you're a charity, there's the only issue for you is whether or not you're registered with the Secretary of State. And we always recommend that every charity be registered, you know, whether they're technically required to or not, because it gives the potential donors a place to go and look for information on your charity. But that's the, you know, it's a $10, well, you've seen the registration form. It's not very cumbersome, I don't believe.
No, I think it's definitely going to help the community keep track of what nonprofits are out there and doing the right thing. And even though we've done this for 20 years, we're still learning a lot of things, and I really appreciate that opportunity of you guys helping us along those lines.
We'd be glad to.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. And I do think that is one of the things we'd like to do more of, is more outreach and education and so forth. The more we can get the message out, I think the better.
Okay. So,
thank you, sir. Thank you. Jordan Schubach. Okay. Okay. And I'll probably end up leaving the record open for a while to allow for any written comments. So, Michelle Stapleton. Okay. Thank you. Larry, that's all I have on this list. Or is there another sign-up sheet, or is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to add? I think I would like to leave the record open in case anyone thinks of anything that, you know, if they'd like to supplement their remarks, and I'd say that also for the benefit of anybody who might be listening on the Internet. I don't know, do we have any timing issues as far as how long we leave the record open?
Well, we are trying to implement fines for an April 15th deadline optimally. It's not, mm-hmm. There's no statutory requirement.
If I think out loud for a moment here, forgive me for doing this, but because I should have thought about this before, but if we issue rules this month and obtain an AG opinion, then we can file them for publication, and as long as we complete the issuance of the rules and get an AG opinion by the end of the month, then they can be published on March 10th and become effective 20 days thereafter, which so March 30th would be the earliest, and that would be dependent on adopting them early enough in the month of February to obtain an Attorney General opinion as to the legality. So with that said, I'm inclined to leave the record open at least to the end of this week. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So perhaps what I'll say is then we'll leave the record open through the close of business on Friday. 7th, March 7th, but close of business 5 o'clock on Friday, and either written comments by mail or email to Larry, would it be to Larry Run or to Chris Cash? And we'd certainly welcome and encourage any comments that people have, suggestions, even minor things, if you see typographical errors or if you think there's things that the wording could be improved. I do think one of the big issues is just the fundamental issue of what is a request, and any suggestions would really be appreciated. That would help us out. So with that, I'll go ahead and then enclose the hearing. I do appreciate your attending and your participation and your input. For the record, the time is 3:06 p.m. Thank you.